Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. So there you go, everybody's favorite musical, Mamma Mia. Is it possible you get to see it again? It is, over the next couple of weekends up in Highland Park and in Northbrook. And you don't want to miss the Highland Park Players in Mamma Mia. It was one of my favorite shows. And when I found out this was coming, I just had to chat with these guys for putting on such a classic show. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. This is Paul Listick. We're going behind the curtain with the cast and executive producer of Mamma Mia. Let me welcome them now. Joining us, as I said, the executive producer, he's also the board president, and Brad Rose. Brad, and you've been on our midday show. Welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And we have the leads of the show. Of course, everybody in the show is a lead, but Hannah Rose, who plays Donna, that has to be, Hannah, a role you've been wanting to play for a long time.
Oh, it really is. This is truly a dream come true, and I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah, I believe it. And playing Bill, Jeff Isaac. Hey, Jeff. Of course, the guys, you know, they're not as... the women kind of do so much in here, but it's still great roles to be one of the males in this show.
It sure is, Paul. Honored to be with you. Yes, I've had a great time with this show so far. The dads don't have as much to do as the women in the show, but what they have to do is choice, as they say.
Yeah, there you go. And playing the role of Sophie, the daughter, Emma Wodlowski, and Emma, that means at least for you and Jeff, you get to be in Mamma Mia 2 when Brad decides to do that one down the line. But that's only if he can get Cher to come back and make a cameo appearance in that. So that may or may not happen. But fun for you, Emma, as well, to be playing. What a great role of Sophie.
Oh, my gosh. It has been so much fun. Just an absolute blast.
Well, you guys, people up in the Highland Park area have got to see you perform. That clip we used was actually from an outdoor performance you did to let some folks know about it. As I said, you've been on the midday show. And, Brad, let me come to you. This is not an easy show to put up. So tell my listeners a bit about, first of all, how long have the Highland Park Players been around? And is this just next in line of series of big challenges? Or is this kind of a you've bitten off a lot here in order to put something great up?
I think that's kind of been our motto now, Paul, is just try to bite off as big of a chunk as we can and hope it all goes well. But now the Highland Park Players have been around, this is our 32nd year, and we really, and I've been involved with the group since 96, and when I took over as board president in the early 2000s, really what I wanted to change was, you know, how many times can the same groups do Music Man, Joseph? I wanted to do stuff that was a little edgier, a little bit more risky, things that people aren't going to do because it's too hard to do. And with Mamma Mia, maybe it's not difficult, but we put everything, we put our all into it. We've got a three-story set, which is not easy to do, and just assembled this amazingly talented staff and cast. So just continue down that path of making sure that we are on cutting edge for theater goers.
Well, if you're doing tough shows, Moulin Rouge should be up next for you next season. But
I like it.
We'll see how that goes. So, Hannah, how long have you been with the Highland Park Players, and what roles have you had?
Oh, goodness. I did my very first show with the Highland Park Players in 2002, Big the Musical. It's where I met my husband, Brad Rose, who we're speaking with. and some of the roles I've played include, 2 years ago I played Babe in the Pajama Game. I was in the ensemble of Cats, which was another just absolute dream. I was also in the cast for 42nd Street. It's been a lot. Going back to the beginning of my career with Highland Park Players, started with Big the Musical, and then I played Ariel in Footloose, and then I played the narrator in Joseph and Millie in Thriller Modern Millie. So I've been very blessed to have a lot of roles with that group.
Since you're married to Brad, do you like, you know, at night say if you expect to have dinner or if you think we're going somewhere this weekend, you will be doing Mamma Mia? Is that kind of the pressure?
I wouldn't go as far as to say that, but there's plenty of banter that goes around our house during a show season, that is for sure.
All right. And Jeff, talk about some of your history up in Highland, because you guys, obviously, this may be full-time for you, but I'm guessing this is something you do out of passion and love, so you probably have other lives. Talk about that, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been in the Chicago area since I got out of school, and that was the 1980s. And it's been over 30 years for me, and I've, like a lot of us, I've had one foot in professional theater productions, one foot in community theater productions throughout that time. And I've been working with Highland Park Players since, I think, 1996 was my first production with them, which was Peter Pan, and I was Captain Hook in that. Wow. And then 42nd Street, there was Julian Marsh, and then was in last year's production of On the Town as Pitkin. So it's been a wonderful relationship with Highland Park as one of the real premier community theaters, not only in Chicagoland, but in my opinion, in the country.
And Emma, you're the young one among us coming to this group. I think ABBA was, I don't even think ABBA was, they were gone by the time you came around to the planet. I don't know, in terms of their music, but although they get together again. But talk about how, I mean, your interest in doing the show. Have you been, Emma, an ABBA fan? Is it something you did grow up with, or was it new to you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely grew up like with this musical in particular. I used to have like the London cast CD, and I remember I had the opportunity to go see the national tour actually in D.C. My parents took me, and I actually got really upset because on the CD it's like the London version, and so like some of the things are slightly different, like Donna's handbag at one point instead of purse, and I was like, wait, this is wrong.
Actually, I saw the show in Spain in Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, but it's Mamma Mia, so who cares? Because you just kind of followed along anyway. So
absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I still loved it.
Yeah. Actually, Brad, that's not a bad idea. Maybe do one of the weekends just in a Hebrew or something and just do it as a...
Good. We'll extend the run. I love the idea.
Right, you know, it's not a bad to do up in the Highland Park. I grew up in Skokie. That works. So, Hannah, talk to me about obviously the dynamics between the woman in the show. It's so critical, right? The three of you, because you not only have to, you know, have great magic between you on the stage here, but there's a history you have and that has to come across.
Absolutely. So I am lucky enough to be performing alongside my real-life best friend, Alexis Armstrong, who plays Tanya. And
did you say to Brad over dinner one night, did you tell Brad over dinner one night, you will cast as my best friend, if you know
what you... Fortunately, Alexis is an extremely talented actor, and she definitely earned the role on her own merit, but
yes.
Definitely it has been so fun. And Angela Carrington, who plays Rosie, has been in my life for a couple years now. She is just nothing but joy and fun and life, and it's wonderful. And then the surprise to me, I guess, in the show with the dynamic is the dynamic that Emma and I have created between the two of us is this beautiful mother-daughter relationship. You know, I have a daughter, but she's 8, and so this is kind of a new experience for me, the idea of having a grown adult daughter, and it's just been a pleasure working with Emma. I adore her.
Oh, that's very cool. And, well, Emma, let's go to you for the follow-up. So, you're having to establish, you know, a mother-daughter relationship here and a history that, you know, isn't real, that you're creating on stage. Easy to do? Were there sort of warm-up exercises you wanted to do to kind of let's develop this relationship? Let's go to dinner?
No, you know, I think it was pretty easy. I mean, Hannah is just wonderful. She's just a lovely person and a wonderful actress. And so I think it was something that came fairly naturally for us, I think.
And Jeff, of course, the guys, there's a different kind of relationship, obviously, between them. And there has to be this sort of surprise element when each of them shows up, they see each other and all of that. How about the guys who are playing the other fathers in this? I don't mean to give anything away with the show, but the other ones in this show, I think everybody knows the plot. Talk about that relationship between you guys.
Yeah, you know, Kevin Kirkpatrick and Mike Weaver both have been involved in the theater community for a lot of years, like myself. And it's a good thing we all get along well, because we do spend a lot of time together, but not only on stage, but off stage. And I think it's funny, the dynamic between us. I think we all secretly think we're the real dad, just like the characters in the show. I think the actors all think that, too. It's funny.
Brad, obviously you had a big budget for flippers in this show. Kind of required for this, but talk to me about sort of the history of Highland Park. I mean, and the players, and we know how long you've been around and some of the great shows you've done, but you really are reaching out to a community. It seems to me, though, as of late, you're almost reaching beyond the community, kind of stretching that reach. Here you are doing this podcast, our midday show. Is there kind of a desire of the Highland Park players to say, you know what, we're really good, which you are. We really do great stuff, and we need to be a destination theater here.
Well, I love that. That was so well said. That's exactly it. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we do stuff just in Highland Park, and people are like, wait, who are you? And it's 32 years. And it's, you know, I think sometimes, you know, when you hear community theater, a lot of people think, oh, it's a bunch of people getting together in a church basement and putting on a show, which is great as well. But we do try to separate it. We try to put on a very high level production where you just can't, you know, for the price you pay for admission, you just can't get it. You know, we did a preview the other night, and we had a lot of people come up to us afterwards saying, oh my gosh, this is as good as anything I've ever seen at the Marriott. Like, why is it so, you know, inexpensive and stuff like that, which is, maybe I need to charge more. I don't know. Maybe we got to talk about that. But, I want more people to get out there and learn who the Highland Park Players are and know that when you come to one of our shows, you're going to have an amazing time with high-level production values.
Well, talk about the space is at 3323 Walters Avenue. It's the Northbrook Theater. Modern space, I assume. Is it multi-purpose?
First of all, it's a theater. I think a lot of, you know, places in the area, they're auditoriums, which means they don't have the proper wing space. They can't fly in things. They don't have dressing rooms. So it's a proper theater that was recently renovated. So it is state-of-the-art. They got state-of-the-art sound and seating now. You know, that said, Paul, another time we should do a podcast on how can we actually get a venue like this in Highland Park. But, you know, we'll do that another time. But it is the closest actual theater to Highland Park, which makes the distance work.
Yeah, and I respect the fact that you want to be in that kind of space. Hannah, when, you know, the show runs from September 13th, it closes on the 22nd. It's only a couple of weeks. Typical of the shows that you guys do, because I'm sure there's a demand for people to say, I wish this was running longer.
Yeah, we sort of have vacillated over the years between the two weekend and the three weekend format. I think ultimately it came down to a budget item, and you know, this state of the art theater is gorgeous. It's also quite expensive to rent, so I think the idea was to throw in those extra Saturday matinee shows. Both weekends we have Saturday shows at 2:00 and 7:30 p.m., which will be a challenge in and of itself. But I think the idea was that throwing in those matinees would help us get a few extra performances without adding an additional weekend of rental. So.
Yeah, and Jeff, as you say, you do community theater, you do professional theater. The scenes of the show that I've seen thus far, before I see the show, but it's to me, if nobody said community theater, I wouldn't have known it. The voices are strong, the blending is powerful, so well cast, and so I imagine it's one of the reasons for you. It has to be as fulfilling whether you're doing something, you know, more along the Broadway line or something here at home. It's all fulfilling because this is really a talented group of folks.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Paul. And I'll tell you, I've done some quote unquote professional productions where the entire budget was less than the costume budget for the show. So it really is extraordinarily well done. And this is in the line of a long storied history of community theater in this country, which, as you know, originally in the middle of the 20th century was the little theater movement. And it's really contributed vastly to the history of theater in America that a lot of people just don't know, that all the professional theater that's available now used to not be. And this was what theater was outside of the large urban centers before.
Emma, I'm going to let you talk a little bit about the plot of this show, because we haven't done that. And I make this kind of assumption that everybody knows Mamma Mia. The music is so great, you can't get it out of your head once you hear it. But, you know, there may be some people who say, well, I know the music, I never actually have seen the show. So, Emma, can you fill us in on exactly, since you're the focus of so much of what goes on in this show, what's this about?
Sure. I mean, Mamma Mia is really the story about Sophie and her mom, Donna, and all the antics that ensue when Sophie's three potential dads arrive for her wedding. And there's a lot of fun dance numbers and, like you said, all the hopefully familiar songs weaved into that.
And Hannah, I'll come to you. It's funny because she said her three potential dads. So if there is somebody who really doesn't know the show, they're going, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So Hannah, it's your history. It's Donna's history. Tell it the way you want.
Spoiler alert. So Donna has a bit of a storied past. Some of it is spelled out within the scene work. Some of it is inferred that, you know, she used to be the front woman of this girl band, and it's kind of suggested that she led a bit of a wild life, and she got together with a guy at one point, and he broke her heart, and so she got together with a couple more guys, and thus the question of Sophie's paternity ensues.
Exactly. And Bill, the character Bill, for you, Jeff, is, you know, these guys, you know, what's funny is as as Hannah tells us about Donna's Wild Life, you guys aren't, so you don't play it like, oh, one of you's a little goofy, whatever, but you're really kind of these straight-laced, you know, sort of businessmen in life, right? You just matured over the years, I suppose, in that character.
Yeah, well, like we've all had relationships in our past, haven't we? Where they weren't permanent, but you always have an undying affection and a warm feeling for those relationships. And this is a really, there are some sweet moments in the show where all three men get to revisit those moments, and it's nice, and I think audience members really connect with that sort of emotion.
Well, I want to encourage everybody. The show, as I said, plays from September 13th only through the 22nd. Brad confirmed for me there will not be an extension. Correct? I mean, if you're going to see it,
fortunately, no. And it's more just because that space gets rented out, so something else is moving in right after we close.
Yeah, so if you want to get tickets, HighlandParkPlayers.com. I assume that's the best place to do that.
That's correct.
Okay. And again, the Highland Park Players up at Northbrook Theater. And I should also clarify that the song, we're going to go out playing the Mamma Mia song again. This is not, I think, as people listen to it, they might either think they're listening to ABBA or they might think they're listening to the Broadway cast. Because sometimes I do use a Broadway cast when I don't have a recording of the current show. But we're not. We're actually listening to this cast. It sounds that good and that great. So I want to go out playing you guys singing the lead song again, Mamma Mia, from the show that you don't want to miss. Again, the Highland Park Players. HighlandParkPlayers.com through September 22nd up in Northbrook. If you live in the burbs, it's a no-brainer for you to get over and see it. Brad and Hannah Rose and Jeff, Emma, thanks for being with me. We're going to go out playing a little bit more of Mamma Mia, sung by you guys.
Mamma Mia, does it show again? My, just how much I missed you.
All right, and let's shift gears a little bit now as we turn to a play which is playing up at the Pride Art Center north on Broadway, 4139, called Casa Valentina. It's a Harvey Fierstein show, and really surprising. I had never seen it before. It was on Broadway back in 2014. And joining us, the director and several of the cast members, and it's a really interesting take on an interesting topic, and we'll tell you all about it. Joining me, playing the roles, dual roles of George and Valentina, you'll understand that in a moment, is Patrick Burns. Patrick, welcome. Playing the role of Charlotte is Danny Taylor, and playing the role of the judge, but also Amy, is Robert Kuhn. Rob, welcome to you and Danny and all of you. Michael Graham is the director of the show. Michael, am I right? Is this the first time this show has been in the Chicago area since Broadway?
Yes, it is.
So talk to me about what led you to select. Well, I'll have you tell me a little bit about the plot. We'll have these guys tell about their characters, but tell listeners what it's all about, why you chose to put it up.
So the equity rights for Casa Valentina were out there, and somebody in Chicago had the rights, and I don't know who, for a few years, and that's why it hasn't been produced in Chicago up until now. When the non-equity rights became available, Pride Films and Plays and David Zack grabbed them up very quickly, just because it's a fascinating story about a group of people that people generally don't know about.
This is true. It takes place in 1962, and let me start with going with Patrick. Patrick, you play George and Valentina. We haven't talked about the plot, so let me have you tell us about your character, but obviously within the scope of why you are both George and Valentina in terms of who the men are who are at this Catskills Resort.
Absolutely. So I play George Valentina. During the day, during the week, he is George. He has a Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 job. And on the weekend, he is the proprietor, along with his wife, Rita, of this Chevalier d'Homme, which is based on a real place in the Catskills of New York, a bungalow, where on weekends, men, should they wish to, could come visit and live as their female alter ego. So when he dresses, he is his created character of Valentina.
And there is Rob Kuhn. You play the judge, meaning you are a judge in this show, but you also, your alter ego is Amy. The thing is, people listening to this who don't know the show or maybe into the topic quite yet, they're thinking, oh, so they're really gay men who are, you know, not, who are living a straight life. That's not what this is.
No. These are all, at least nominally, heterosexual married men from New York. that just they have this in their personality. This feels, in a way, their authentic self is when they assume their female alter ego.
And Danny, as Charlotte, actually, my memory, that's all we know you as, right? We don't know you as a male alter ego in this. Am I right?
You're right. In the play itself, it's not, but actually in the cast listings, I do have a male name of Isidore, but you never see me as a male in the play.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably because Charlotte has a specific role that has to be played in this play. And, you know, when you think of different kinds of civil rights issues moving forward, there are Charlottes in every one of those civil rights movements, gay rights, minority rights, whatever it may be. Talk to me about Charlotte and what role she plays, and if you agree with the way I'm describing her.
I absolutely do agree with the way you're describing her. Charlotte has come to the resort with a bit of an agenda. She's trying to create these sororities for heterosexual men or transvestites, all across the country. And she's actually based on a real person called Virginia Prince, who actually did go around creating these societies. And I believe they actually still exist. Some of them still exist to this day.
Michael, why is it important? I kind of know that I know the answer in asking this question, but I think it's important for listeners to know it. You know, we hear so much about, again, gay rights, same-sex marriage, all these things that are issues of today. This takes us back to 1962, but it seems as though this is you can't call it a missing piece, because as Danny just said, there are these places even around today, though people may not know. What's important about the community society understanding this particular form of lifestyle? To Michael.
So most importantly, I think, is just to show that the LGBTQ community is a much broader range of people than we might have thought before. That, you know, these people in 1962 didn't have the vocabulary that we have today to be able to describe themselves as transgender. That term didn't even exist in 1962. There were definitely people who had what were called sex changes at that point. And so that was a thing at that point, but the word transgender as we know it now didn't exist. I think it's really important to see that here's a group of people who on the surface all look like they belong to the same group, which is heterosexual cross-dressers. But as the play goes on, we see cracks in that, and where they all may have identified as one thing at the beginning of the play, we see that they actually are a broader spectrum of gray rather than just a black and white sort of definition.
And Rob, I'm going to come to you for this plot. The reason is I'm coming to you with this question is it's a plot point, but I'm not going to give it away. But the thing is, even those who begin to equate in their mind that people who identify as cisgender straight men and living this life, there's still, I think, the potential of confusion with whether or not they're actually gay men. And in fact, I'll let you say it how you want. But with regard to the character of the judge, that dilemma, that conflict truly comes through, and it's an important point people have to understand to help us understand the difference between people.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just with the judge. There's another reference from another character in the play that things might not be as cut and dried as everybody would like to think they are, because everybody would like to have a little like a little mailbox that they can sort everybody else into. And as Michael was saying, those boundaries are not hard and fast. Those boundaries can often be really permeable, and the spectrum is really broad. So this is one thing. Everybody in the play is negotiating with how do they express who they really are, and where is it safe to express who they really are. And it's one of the most risky things that a person can do, is to really just say, this is me, this is who I am. And one of the most powerful things in any series of human relationships is when someone can see you and recognize you and affirm who you are. And one character talks about walking the balance between ecstasy and terror. And all of these characters do that, and everybody takes their step on or off that tightrope in a different way.
And Patrick,
you see that with the female characters in the play too. The two female characters in the play, they also have the times where they're on the tightrope, and everybody is negotiating that in their own fashion. And I think that's one of the fascinating things about the play.
And that comment actually took me to where I was going to go next and come to Patrick with it. Because, yes, everybody in the show, I think, including Charlotte, I don't know that we know that, but everybody in the show certainly is married and have these family lives. But actually, Patrick, for George, we see your wife. We see her throughout the whole show. And what's really interesting, as Harvey has created that character, is she's quite accepting of the whole thing. Yeah. I think that's the word. At least she's maybe she senses there's nothing she can do about it. But we actually get her story and therefore George's story along with her as well.
Absolutely. I mean, my wife is played by the brilliant Nicolia Aguirre. I love her very much. She's fantastic. And I'd really like to think that their relationship is one of the central conflicts of the play, is how do we reconcile this lifestyle? And at the end of the play, I don't want to give away too much, but she does ask a very difficult question of I know that I am your wife. You are George. You are my husband. But who am I to Valentina? And I think she asks herself that throughout the entire play. And I don't quite know how to answer that, because we don't know. We don't have this vocabulary. We're just off of the baby boomer generation where, you know, the 50s were all about creating that Leave It to Beaver nuclear family lifestyle. And now we're well into the 60s where people are exploring different facets of their personality. Like Rob said, this is who I am. This is who I identify as. And it's not necessarily fitting into a black and white cookie cutter definition of a person. What is this marriage? What am I? How do I exist with this other person? And, you know, sometimes the play can answer that a little bit and sometimes not. And that's kind of what one of the central conflicts of the play is.
You know, as I watched it when it opened, I thought that if Harvey had been in the show, and he was not in the show as a performer, he's the playwright, unlike, you know, say, Torch Song Trilogy that he wrote and performed in, I thought he might be Bessie as the character, maybe just because of the humor and the whatever, and you kind of can see that Harvey a little bit in that way. But actually, Danny, and this is just a guess on my part, if Harvey was going to cast himself, I'm thinking he might just take your role of Charlotte. What do you think?
I think he very possibly could. It's a hell of a role, I have to admit. You know, when I first read the play, it's like, oh my God, I want to play this. So I can definitely see Harvey pulling this off with you know, ease and aplomb, as they say. So.
And sending the message through that character, which we learn. Michael, when the show is over, again, without giving anything away at the end, and watching Patrick have some really powerful minutes there at the end of the show, how is it you want? What do you want audiences to feel as they leave? I mean, for me, it was a very powerful experience that kept me talking about the show for quite a while afterwards. It just raised so many questions, so many issues.
That's definitely what I want. Is I want people to walk away from it and go have drinks, go have dinner, go talk about it. How do you reconcile? Because the play doesn't give any character a resolution, which is fascinating to me. And so I think people do walk away trying to figure out not just what happened to the characters in the play, but also how our current society looks at people who are considered others. And that includes people within your own grouping. So if we look at LGBTQ, we look at this as a one big group, but sometimes people within our own groups, we start to discriminate against, or we ignore, or we claim that they're others. Like in the play, these heterosexual crossdressers don't want to have anything to do with homosexuals because they feel like homosexuals aren't respectable. So even homosexual crossdressers aren't included in their group.
It's just fascinating, and it's again for Harvey Fierstein. I mean, one, it's got his humor, the insight, the movement. It's just everything you'd expect in something that he's written, which is why as soon as I saw it was coming to Chicago and to Pride, I knew I had to see this show. You guys are all really great in it, and just so well done. And I love the intimate space of the Pride Art Center, because you're really on top of the action. I was in the front row, and so you guys like right there in front of me, and so it was. I almost stood up and started performing, but I didn't think anybody would appreciate that. The show is playing through September 29th at Pride Arts Center. It's up at 4139 North Broadway. And as you said, Michael, you know, you can stay for dinner. There's no pun intended. Michael's Pizza is right across the street, which is a great place to eat. There's a Thai place. There's a burger place. You can have dinner there and see the show. It's just, you know, stay out of the downtown area for a while and just have a really moving, powerful experience and thought-provoking experience through this show. I'm glad, Michael, as you said, that David Zack, who's the artistic director of Pride Films and Plays, grabbed these rights up to put it on. It's a show that I think needs to be seen and get people talking. Michael Graham, Patrick Burns, Danny Taylor, Rob Kuhn, thank you. Enjoy the rest of the run through the 29th. I encourage everybody to get out there and see Casa Valentina at the Pride Arts Center. It will have you talking afterwards without question. And my guess is open you up to a world of our society you might just not have known about or maybe misunderstood to begin with, and those questions get answered. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.